You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Frank, of course, of the Yes Network. You can catch Frank. You can catch Sarah Kustok. You can catch Michael Grady. You can catch them all on the Yes app postgame tomorrow night. And they will have it all to break down for you following Game 6. He, of course, also has his morning show on SiriusXM NBA Radio. Frank, Chris Carlin, how are you tonight?
Chris, how are you? What's going on?
I'm outstanding, Frank. And I've been trying to put into context the performance from Durant last night. When you first saw it, was there another one that kind of came to mind that you would immediately compare it to?
Yeah, it was hard to think of one. You know, I was lucky enough to be at the game when LeBron and the Miami Heat were facing elimination up in Boston, which was a game 6 in, was that either the second round of the conference finals? In fact, I think it was the night when Johan Santana threw a no-hitter for the New York Mets. But I thought LeBron facing elimination that night and putting up 45, you know, on the road elimination game, I put that one ahead of it just because of what was at stake. You know, you lose that game and your season's over. Remember, LeBron had won a championship at that point. But just in terms of him carrying a team, 31 points in the second half, 20 in the fourth quarter, he was essentially unguardable. Even that shot that he threw up that made it a four-point game, that three where, you know, he was off balance and just kind of chucked it up there late in the shot clock, you know, that just told you, you know, what kind of rhythm he was in. Even when he was off balance late in the clock, he still made the shot.
Absolutely amazing to see that performance throughout last night, Frank. And when I look at Durant, it was one of those games where I felt like it couldn't hurt his legacy if things did not go the Nets' way and things didn't go his way, but it could only really enhance it. How much did he enhance what his legacy is, or does that depend on whether or not they win this series?
I mean, winning this series will be big, obviously. I also think, you know, this group kind of getting together, you know, really, you know, there was only going to be one result that's going to be satisfactory. And at the very least, getting to a finals and winning a championship. Now, if it doesn't happen this year, it could certainly happen next year or maybe the year after that. But, you know, obviously, you're running out of chances when you do that. But, you know, a game like that, like I went into it thinking that he would play well. I didn't think that he would play 49 points well. And, you know, he did. He was out there the entire game. He played every second, all 48 minutes. And what I like about the way Kevin Durant plays, and, you know, getting it, you know, we all know that he's great, but when you look at it more closely, the, you know, the 35 games that he played during the regular season, all the playoff games, you know, the one thing about him, he's not just a great player. He very rarely makes a bad basketball play. He makes the right play most of the time. He passes the ball. He defends. He's certainly a good teammate. He makes everybody around him better. You could tell that he lifts the confidence of everybody when he's out there playing like that. It was such a terrific performance. And I looked it up right away. You know, it was his highest scoring game, Chris, since he had 50 on April 26th of 2019. That was a closeout game in the first round against the Clippers. So he was still playing for the Golden State Warriors at the time. That's also 6 weeks before he blows out his Achilles. So, you know, when he blew out his Achilles that night in Toronto, when I was there that night and how shocking and stunning the whole thing was, and right away you're thinking, will he ever get back to this type of level? You think that he'll get back on the court. You know, can he be an all-star? Probably. But you're not sure, like, if he could, you know, regain his status as one of the top three players in the league. And last night, he ends up scoring 49. He would have had 50 had he not missed that free throw. Like, that was probably the only one bad thing he did. You know, he missed a couple from the free throw line, including one that would have given him 50 points. But he's, to me, he's all the way back. I mean, the guy is just he's a force. He's 7 feet tall, so difficult to guard. And obviously, Milwaukee didn't do a good enough job defending him. But a game like that, that's going to be one that, you know, Kevin Durant's funny because he even said, I don't rank my performances in his credit. He's thinking about game 6. But years from now, that's going to be one that people are going to talk about. That's one of the greatest performances you're ever going to see in the playoffs.
And he was outwardly ticked he missed that free throw because he knew it meant 50. There was no doubt.
Yep.
There was no doubt. Frank Isola, Yes Network, SiriusXM, NBA Radio with us. Frank, on the front of how they defended him, I really am blown away by the fact that Giannis wasn't on him a lot more, especially in the fourth quarter. What do you make of that? Because we heard Chris Paul say a few weeks ago, when you're the man, you have to go out and guard the other team's best player, too, in crunch time.
Yeah, I sometimes don't understand that. I always think about football. You know, they'll put the best cornerback on the best wide receiver. Yet in the NBA sometimes when it seems natural. Now, do you want to get – you don't want to get Giannis in foul trouble? I get that. But going into the fourth quarter, you know, I think Giannis entered the fourth with maybe – it was either two or three fouls. So foul problem, you know, foul trouble wasn't an issue. You know, he's gone such a role, and it really started in the third quarter, Chris. You know, it was 57 – it was 74 to 57 Milwaukee led. It was a 17-point lead. And then, you know, they started making threes, and they entered the fourth quarter, and, they had gotten their rhythm back. I think you have to put Giannis on them. So I thought Milwaukee defensively didn't get it done. Offensively, they could be very frustrating to watch. I've gotten to know Giannis pretty well over the last years. Yeah, the guy's a terrific guy, and he's everything that you'd want in a person, an NBA player. But to me, he has to make better decisions on the court, both offensively and defensively. That turnaround jumper that he hit against Harden, under 2 minutes to go with the game tied. I mean, that's not his shot, and you got to be able to get a better shot there.
And you're going against a hobbled James Harden.
it made no sense. So if you look at the Nets, and, you know, Mike D'Antoni was always like this as a coach, and obviously Steve Nash had played for Mike D'Antoni, and now he's coaching the Nets, and he's smart about stuff like this. They kept exploiting Brook Lopez because Brook Lopez cannot guard Jeff Green or Blake Griffin. So there came that point in the fourth quarter where they said, the heck with it, we're going to cut out the middleman. James Harden, just get down the court, act as a decoy. Durant was dribbling the ball up the court. They would set the high screen, and then Durant would either turn the corner, go to the basket. Brook Lopez couldn't guard him on the switch. Or they would kick it out, they'd set the pick, kick it out to an open man for a shot, or Durant would pull up and hit a shot. They just could not defend it. So I don't know why Brook Lopez was out there. I don't know why Giannis wasn't on Kevin Durant enough, or even basically any possessions the entire game. I think it'll be a little bit different tomorrow night. I also don't expect Durant to play 48. I'd be very shocked if he plays all 24 minutes of the first quarter. So Milwaukee isn't done yet by any stretch of the imagination, but that has to be a demoralizing loss for them. You're up 17. James Harden, like you pointed out, isn't moving well. He's not James Harden. And for him to go out there for 46 minutes says a lot about his character. But, you know, Milwaukee's not done, but they have to work on it. But they have a couple of things that they have to sort out.
Frank, when you look at Harden, we know what the numbers said, but what impact did his playing have on the Nets last night?
Now, I've always been a big Harden guy. I didn't like the way that he handled his departure from Houston. You know, he showed up out of shape. You know, he showed up late for camp. You got to do things the right way. So he forces his way out. But ever since he got to Brooklyn, he has played really well. For a while there, he was, you know, right with Nikola Jokic, in my opinion, 1-2 for the MVP. And then he hurt his hamstring, which knocked him out of that whole thing. You know, the guy, if you look at his career, the guy loves to play. You know, you can say what you want about him. He's in Houston. He dribbles the ball a lot. He knows how to draw fouls. You know, the lack of great success in the playoffs, I get it. But there's a lot of guys, Chris, and you know this, that after the first quarter of a game like that, where he's out there and you can tell that he doesn't look sharp, he's not making any hard cuts, he can't get to the basket, 8 of his 10 shots happen to be threes. You know, there could have been a lot of guys that would have grabbed the back of their hamstring and limped off, saying, well, I tried to give it a go, guys. I tried to give it all I could. I just don't have it. He was a decoy for 46 minutes. On a night where your numbers are going to look terrible, there's really not much you can do. To me, that was an inspiring performance. It might have been one of the best 1-for-10, 0-for-8 on 3 performances you're ever going to see in the NBA. And I think, you know, him doing that, you know, we talk about leadership all the time. That is a form of leadership, when, especially for great players. It's not easy for great players to go out there when they're not close to 100% and still perform. And for him, he certainly didn't perform at a high level. I thought he was much better in the second half. But him kind of serving as a decoy, he made a couple of good passes to Durant, cutting to the basket. I thought it said a lot about James Harden. Believe me, the guy loves to play. I know that kind of makes him a little bit of an oddball now, in the NBA, where so many of these guys don't want to play. This guy loves being out there. If he's not out there, he's legitimately hurt. There's no load management with James Harden.
Frank Isola of Yes Network, he and Sarah Kustak, Michael Grady, have the post game tomorrow night after Game 6 on the Yes app. Frank, Joe Harris, what's wrong here?
know, that's a disappointment. And, you know, the first play of the game, you know, the Nets, you know, obviously you come out and you design your first play, and it was Joe Harris coming off of a screen, and he was wide open, and he missed that three, and he needs to do better. He did not play well in the game in Milwaukee in game four. He did not make enough shots. They need him to knock down threes. It's going to make things easier for Kevin Durant, because if you're going to rely on Kevin Durant to score 49 points tomorrow, you're going to be in trouble. And maybe he could do it if there's a game seven on Saturday. But Joe Harris made big strides this year. And the one thing I like about Joe Harris, you know, teams are starting to run him off the three-point line. And all season long, he was willing to put the ball on the floor, drive to the basket, and finish. That was not a good game for him. But I think when you're a guy like that and you're a shooter, when you have those shots, you certainly have to take them. So, you know, out of every positive thing that we saw last night, including the play of Jeff Green, even Landry Shamet did a nice job, Blake Griffin, they need Joe Harris to perform at a much higher level.
Well, is he the guy then, Frank, on the road? You know, we always talk about role players playing better at home. Is he the guy on the road in a game six that has to elevate his game for them to not have to go to a game seven?
No, I think that's fair. Anyway, he got a big contract during the offseason. He's a very good player. The players have a lot of confidence in him. Steve Nash has a lot of confidence in him. Maybe it's just a matter of getting that first shot, or maybe it's a matter of putting the ball on the floor and maybe taking a whack, and then you go to the free throw line, you knock down a couple of free throws, and that gets you going. But he has to be – you know, I went into the game thinking last night, again, I thought Durant would play well. I didn't think 49 points, but I thought he'd get 35, maybe between 35 and 40. And then, if Harden played, I didn't think he would get much from James Harden. I thought that was, like, unrealistic to expect much. And you didn't get much from him except for the inspiration that he provided serving as a decoy. But I thought there was going to have to be somebody out there that was going to really have one of the best games of his career, whether that was going to be Joe Harris or it was going to be Landry Shamet, somebody like that. And it ended up being Jeff Green, who had 27 points. That's a career playoff high for him. And Christian, he came into the game. He had been dealing with that foot issue, which held him out of a bunch of games in the playoffs. He only had a total of six field goals in the postseason prior to game five the other night. And in that game, he had seven three-pointers. I mean, that was an unbelievable performance. That was his season high in points, and it's the most points he's ever scored in a playoff game. And to do it in that setting, and he's probably thinking, please, Mike Budenholzer, keep trying to defend me with Brooke Lopez, because I will stand out here all game long, and I'll just drain threes, because a lot of them were wide open. He played a really smart game. You know, Chris, if you go back, you know, that year that LeBron and the Cavs beat the Celtics, it was the year that Kyrie couldn't play in the conference finals. That game seven back in Boston, when, you know, Boston, I think, was up five with, you know, just about 5 minutes to go in the game, and one of the key guys for the Cavs down the stretch was Jeff Green, kind of playing pick and roll, pick and pop with LeBron. That experience, that experience goes a long way in moments like that. And Jeff Green is not afraid of the moment whatsoever. And he came through with flying colors.
And I thought, Frank, the underrated aspect of the game is the way he played in the first half actually kept it manageable. It never, he didn't play well, it could have gotten to 25 easily as opposed to, 17 or 18. But him hitting big shots actually kept it to about 13, 14 and in range.
Great call. I thought the same thing, because at halftime, you know, Durant has 18 and they're down 16. Durant is on pace to get 40 points and they were still down 16 points at halftime. I thought that was the key of the first half. And then I think in the second half, when it was 74-57, the Nets inbound the ball right in front of their bench. They pass it to Blake Griffin. Brook Lopez is standing in the paint. Blake Griffin knocks down a three, which really got their run going. Because I felt there, you know, there was still 7 minutes to go in the third quarter, but I kind of felt if Milwaukee could get a stop and go up 19, then all, you know, it's just everything about the game could change at that moment. I thought that Blake Griffin three was big. Because the Brooklyn Nets, Chris, they scored 57 points in the first 29 minutes of the game. In the last 19 minutes of the game, they scored 57 points. So they completely demolished Milwaukee from that point on. The final, you know, from that, the last 19 minutes, the score was 57-34. They absolutely ran Milwaukee off the court.
Frank Isola, Yes Network. Frank, I'd be remiss to not ask you about the Knicks this offseason. What do you see? Is this the offseason where they go and get somebody big, or is it, an offseason of kind of staying the course here a little bit and cashing in next year when there are an awful lot of big free agents.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, you notice about you know, a lot of these free agents, especially the guys that are on their rookie deals or, you know, their second contract, their super max, whatever the case may be. You know, everyone at the last year at this time was thinking, hey, Giannis Antetokounmpo, if Milwaukee gets knocked out early in the playoffs, he'll be a free agent. He doesn't sign, and then he'll be available in the summer of 2021. Well, he ended up signing. Most of the guys end up signing. It's not easy to get those players. I think that's why, you know, some of the people in the organization were really interested in Gordon Hayward. You know, very talented player, offensive guy. You add him. I know he's had a history of injuries. You know, he ends up obviously signing with Charlotte. That's off the board. I think what the Knicks have to be happy about this year is that with the front office and certainly with the head coach, you know, they establish themselves as a legitimate franchise again and a place that doesn't look completely dysfunctional, where if you're a free agent, you look at the Knicks and say, you know what? They're definitely on the uptick here. This is a place where if I go, you know, it's not going to be a complete mess. It's not going to kind of destroy my career. Not my bank account, but it's not going to kind of destroy my career. I think they've done a great job there. I think now it's up to the front office, because Tom Thibodeau did a really good job improving, you know, the value of all the players on that roster. Certainly Julius Randle is the perfect example. But when you get to the playoffs, Chris, and you've seen this a million times, you know, the Knicks got by because they played harder than everybody this season. In a league where not all the teams and all the players played hard every night, that was not the case with the Knicks. They played hard every night. But when you get to the playoffs, you need talent to win. And yeah, Atlanta had more talent. The Knicks did not have more. You know, the Knicks finished ahead of Miami. The Knicks did not have more talent than Miami either. They don't have more talent than Boston. You know, so they got by just on, like, hard work and things like that. But, this, you know, it's a, you know, the NBA is all about acquiring big-time talent, and somehow they're going to have to do it. And I kind of think, you know, if you – now the expectations are going to be pretty high for this team. The Knicks are going to have to go out and try to – you know, I don't know if that's going to happen via trade or free agency, but they're going to try to – they're going to have to do something. I think that's going to be the big challenge now for Leon Rose, Scott Perry, and William Wesley, a.k.a. Worldwide Wells.
Last one, Frank. Is the biggest accomplishment of that first year restoring the credibility as opposed to what actually happened on the court?
I think so. That's why I can't – yeah, yes. Are you disappointed that they went out in – what did it end up being? 5 games, right? Mm-hmm. You know, would you like to see them take Atlanta to 7 games? Would you like to see them get out of the first round? Obviously, you know. But I can't call the season a disappointment. No one, you know, came into this year thinking that they were going to finish with the fourth best record in the Eastern Conference. It was essentially the same roster. Let's be fair now. And, you know, everyone, you know, would always talk about Tom, oh, he doesn't play young guys. He had Obi Toppin and Emmanuel Quickly playing key minutes, you know, in the playoffs. And then the other thing was, go back to when they got Derrick Rose. Everybody, oh, he's going to stunt the development of this guy. Why do they need this old guy? And that's completely absurd. Derrick Rose led the team by a mile in plus-minus. Derrick Rose ended up being a huge addition to the team. Tom is a good coach. Tom makes players better, but I think, you know, he's proven this in Chicago when they had a huge jump when he was there, and they proved it in Minnesota when he had a huge jump with the Timberwolves, and you see how what the Timberwolves have done since they got rid of Tom. Same thing with the Chicago Bulls. It's not exactly like they're knocking it out of the park. And I think Tom has changed his approach a little bit. I think he works much better with the people in the organization. I don't think he takes the job home with him, where, you know, losses are still going to eat him up, but I think he kind of views things a little bit different. But believe me when I tell you this, and I know this from talking to him since the season ended, the guy, his life is basketball, and there's two jobs that he would love. It was the Knicks job, and it was the Boston Celtics job. And the Knicks job would be number one on the list. The fact that he has his job, he is not going to let a day go by where he's not thinking about ways to make the Knicks better. He will spend, like, he's married to the Knicks in this job. He's going to put in all the work. The Knicks are in a really good place when it comes to Tom, because no one is going to outwork him when it comes to getting the team better and getting the team more prepared.
Frank, great stuff. Looking forward to the post game tomorrow night. You and Sarah Kustok, Michael Grady on the Yes app right after the Nets and the Bucks in Game 6. Great stuff as usual, bro.
Who do you really want to listen to there? Me, Sarah, or Michael? Be brutally honest, Chris. Which one,
Frank,
of the three?
Frank, you know I love you. I mean, we go back too long, Frank. Yeah.
How about when I saw you in the studio in New York? I had the mask on. You were like, who is this creep walking up to my seat? I remember you were doing, I think you you were doing the radio show that day. Chris, how wacky of a studio is that?
That was crazy. It was. We're doing a radio show from basically a high chair and a camera, but it's all good now. It's all good now.
Chris, when they first set that up, that partition didn't used to be there. So that whole office would be open, and I would be doing around the horn there. It was, you know, believe it or not, don't let my good looks and winning personality fool you. I'm very insecure. And to be there with like everybody staring at you, it was a little rough. They put that partition up just for me. How about that? I think that's the reason they put it up.
Well, so the poor woman who sits right in front of it, she had to sit there and listen to me yelling for 2 hours.
Yeah, she's a lovely person. She's funny every day. I'll be in there tomorrow. I'm going to tell you, said hello.
I'll be there, Frank. I will see you. Good stuff.
All right. Well, again, leave me like a piece of candy or give me like a water. Leave something by the seat. So when I get there, I have something. All right.
You got it. Frank Isola.
Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yes Network, SiriusXM NBA Radio. It does a morning show with Brian Scalabrine. Very informative. And Frank and Sarah Kustak, who is outstanding, and Michael Grady, also terrific, on the Yes Post game tomorrow night. It will be on the Yes app, as the Yankee game is obviously on Yes at the time. Nets and the Bucks, game 6 tomorrow night.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.